Of your mind start to change, locked doors, confusion galore, feel the panic in your chest start to roar, grows deeper, release the rage, freeing up the souls that were once afraid, so we march like the battle begins, now the fight to erase our previous sins. deep breath, you know what's next. No weakness, time to flex. Let them know that you're at your best. It doesn't make sense to begin to rest. A new era, a force to ride. Feel it in your bones, eyes open wide. You're the future, pound the ground. Everybody get used to the fact you'll be around.
You are listening to The Terry Project.
Terry Project.
The Terry Project.
Terry Project Podcast.
From CITR.
CITR 101.9 FM.
Here at UBC.
The University of British Columbia.
In Vancouver.
To find out more.
Even more.
About The Terry Project, visit our website at
terry.ubc.ca.
And subscribe to our podcast on iTunes.
My one big idea
is priceless.
What can be better than that?
By the way, this is somebody's favorite show! Hi, Dan Shakespeare here. You know, for most of the stuff that I play, you probably think that I'm much older. But you know what? Most of you are probably way off, because I'm only 23 years old. Tune in to The Shakespeare Show between noon and 1 p.m. on Wednesdays. It's songs from before the 1920s to alternative stuff today. Plus jokes and riddles. All sorts of fun stuff. Just put any of it on your iTunes if you need to. Pretty soon it'll be coming out on albums.
Studying abroad looks great on your resume and opens doors for exciting career paths. Don't miss the Study and Go Abroad Fair on Wednesday, February 26th from 3 p.m. to 7 p.m. at the Vancouver Convention Center, East Ballroom. Admission is free. Come early at 2 p.m. to listen to our guest seminar on how to access over $100 million worth of scholarships for your studies. Check the website on studyandgoabroad.com. Vancouver is gearing up for the 27th annual Bob Marley Birthday Bash. Once again, the birthday bash will be held on Saturday, February 8th at the Grandview Legion Hall, 2205 Commercial Drive. Artists performing this year are Geronimo, Zuki Joseph, Macronix, Rasta Rubin, and the Selassie I Power Band, featuring Fred Locke Sasher and other special guests, Ultra Flex Crew, Purple Soul Band, and MCs George Barrett and Louis Sutherland. Jamaican food and refreshments will be on sale. Advance tickets available at Zulu, High Life, and Rhythm and Spice.
On February 8th, come join the Musqueam Nation in support of fundraising for their youth cultural exchange to New Zealand. Headlining the fundraiser will be Murray Porter, a Juno Award-winning blues musician, critically lauded for the interplay between his buttery soft keyboard skills and his gravelly intonated voice. The fundraiser benefits 7 Musqueam youth who will be traveling to Rotorua to explore Maori culture and how it can inform their own traditional experience. The event will be held at the Musqueam Cultural Center, located at 4000 Musqueam Avenue on Saturday, February 8th at 7 p.m.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Language the Language at CITR 101.9 FM here on the campus of the University of British Columbia. Oud hangas is gan. Kit ukon is gan. Kaunsanga hinu dikya ang. Tatlanas ha dao di ijang. Katsakas di ukwalagin. Woodrow Morrison hinu dia arts ha dao kitkya ang. Di ao chayang hinu hat kit. Virginia Cloud hinu maiden name guy lagas hidan. Wagyan de hung Hansenan, Woodrow Morrison, Kyagan. Is gant la da hat kilt Kyagan. Dinan u viola nat nakatla. Nang hangundals hinu di nan kyang. Well, briefly in Haida language, I said I have three names. Kauda Hangas, knows when to let go. Kit'ukun, that's the butt of the spear, the one that stands in the face of adversity. And Kaunsanga, walking day, the man who walks in a room carrying a newborn child or brings a special day. I'm of the eagle tribe of the Haidas, Northern Haida, we're called Kis Hat'ai. Kis is something very old. Hat'ai is human. I'm of the Tzatlanas Hat'ai Uijang. I'm of the Tzatlanas clan. Tzatlanas. Tzat is a seabird, a land bird that's found along the seashores. It's called the Pacific Golden Plover. And that's a symbol for the name for our clan. Tzatlanas. Lana was the name of a village. So we get our clan names from historical events and from physical locations. And in English, I'm known as Woodrow Morrison or Woody. And my mother, her Haida name was Chayong. Her maiden name was Virginia Cloud. And so when I say my name, Hinudikya Ang, the Ang sound means that I'm presently alive. Whereas with my mother, I use the word Hidan, which means she was. And then my father, his English name was Woodrow Morrison Sr. in Haida Dladai. And my grandmother, Viola Nakatla. In Haida, she had two names. Excuse me. Nang Hangundas is a deep sea rolling wave, and she was also known as Stlai Tawai Kuiwas. Stlai is your hands, Tawai is oil, and Kuiwas is something very precious. So she had precious healing hands. Anyway, that just a little bit of my identity. And since mostly the two languages we have here today are Haida and English, and I guess, Robin, well, you speak another language, don't you?
French, and I've tried to teach myself my mother tongue, which is Bangla or Bengali.
Bengali? Excuse me. Yeah, I was talking to your father, and when he told me that he was born in India, in the province of Bengal, and so when he spoke about Bangladesh, then it dawned on me what he was talking about, that it came from the people of the province of Bengal.
Right.
So, and then he told me about the struggle, too, of keeping your own language, of after the India was partitioned into India and Pakistan. I guess Bengal was in Pakistan. And so he said one day they were in school and they were told that from now on the language is going to be, what was it?
Urdu.
Urdu
is Pakistan's language. Mm-hmm.
And so suddenly, you know, they didn't know, they couldn't read anything or whatever. And there was a big fight over that. And so they were able to keep their own language. And I guess one of his contemporaries wasn't satisfied with that, and he kept pushing until he got UNESCO to designate February 21st as the International Mother Tongue Day.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how you end up with your own country too, isn't it? Bangladesh, because of the fight over the language.
That's right, yeah.
So you're trying to teach it, you teach yourself, or?
Teach myself. Well, growing up, it was, I don't know if this is true across all people's experiences, but I find if the mother of the house speaks a language, it's easier for the children to learn. My dad was away working most of the time. My mother's from England, so she didn't speak the language. So we were never really exposed to the language growing up in a way that it stuck with us. It would be around us, but only in small doses.
So I think that was pretty much the same situation for me. My mother was in Haida. Her father was Cherokee, and I guess her mother was, I think, Welsh and Chickasaw. So mother came to Alaska, married my father, and came to Alaska with him. And so we were, either at home all the time. Dad's either out trapping or hunting or fishing, commercial fishermen. Then later I started going with him, commercial fishing, but still the balance of the year was around my mother.
Mm.
And she didn't speak Haida. So the French part, though, did you learn that in school?
Mm-hmm. That's right.
So what, high school and?
Elementary and high school, just being part of the French program. So It's not a language I've kept in touch with, though, but if I need to, I think I could pick it up pretty easily.
I never could hear the sounds in French. There's certain sounds I just can't hear. When my wife and I first came to Canada, she was recruited to teach at Calgary University. So she was teaching at a satellite program at Lethbridge University in Lethbridge. And she wanted the kids to get into French immersion. So we went to the local school, which is Catholic. The Catholics were the ones that had the French immersion program. So my wife told them she didn't want any proselytizing. She didn't want them to be Catholic. She just wanted them to learn French.
Mm.
I wasn't working. I was still waiting to get my landed immigrant status, so was Mr. Mom. And so, the youngest one wasn't in school yet, China, but Joe was in elementary school there, and Danielle was a little bit older. She was just about through elementary school. And so every day when he'd come home from school, I'd ask, what'd you learn today, Joe? Or did you do any, whatever. And one day when I asked him, what'd you do in school today? He said, we ate Jesus' legs. I wanted to laugh so bad, And so, trying to keep a straight face, I said, you did what? And he said, we ate Jesus' legs. And I asked, what do you mean? He said, my friend Ben had to go into another room, and he wanted me to go with him, so we went in there, and we had to kneel, get down on our knees, and put our hands under our chin, and stick out our tongue, and they put this white thing on our tongue. And I asked Ben what it was, and he said that was Jesus' legs. I guess if you got to identify part of the host, So I had to go outside, so I could laugh, the reasoning of kids, So that was the only thing I got out of all the time they went to school to learn French.
She's coming home with, something in this belly.
So we're looking forward to that, that UNESCO's International Mother Tongue Day. And what I think I'll do is I'll just go through some phrases here, some short phrases in Haida, and talk a little bit about them. But also, I want to talk a little bit about this whole concept of heaven, too, the way it's understood in the traditional Haida. But I think I'm going to ask you to play some music. I got to Mm-hmm. I got a sneeze.
If you are 65 years of age or older, you may be eligible to participate in a free exercise program offered at the YMCA in Surrey, Langara, and downtown Vancouver as part of a research study being conducted by the University of British Columbia. In this program, you are invited to attend exercise classes offered 3 days per week for 3 months. If you are interested, call Dr. Samantha Harden at 604-822-9140. Again, the number is 604-822-9140. More information at goal.kin.educ.ubc.ca.
Okay, I done took care of my nose. Yeah, I kind of got this cough and sneezing, and it's pretty well over with now. But anyway, I was... last week I talked a little bit about that history, you know, about the worm can get in your mind and create a need for stuff you don't need. Anyway, on Tuesday, I think it was Monday or Tuesday, which February 3rd, something was bothering me. I didn't know what it was. I went to work, but I didn't feel well, so I started for home and stopped off at False Creek Marina. And I grew up around fishing boats. So I was walking along looking at the boats. For some reason, I guess maybe it's the familiarity, but I always feel sort of settled when I'm feeling out of sorts. But this time it was different. I just felt lost. And then I kind of remembered something what my wife had said to me earlier. She said, you're probably feeling your dad's birthday, something like that. And I didn't think much of it. And then it suddenly dawned on me I was really missing my dad. And he died in 2009 at the age of 96. But yeah, I was really, all of a sudden I realized how much I was missing him. But see, in our way, we can still talk to them because they're never gone. We say, who's Dan King song? I'll see you again. That's sort of long ago. Someday I'll see you. So I said, Dad, I hope that in the village on the other side, everything is settled for you. This is a way of saying that everything is in balance. And my mother died in 1980. So he lived 39 years longer than she did. So I said, well, I hope you and Mom are together after 39 years. Then when I got home, I put that on Facebook. And I started getting all sorts of comments from, I guess there's over 200. And one of the people on there I know because they were a neighbor of ours was mentioning about her parents. Her father... birthday was the same day as my father's, but there were 20 years difference in age. Anyway, he died, and then the widow remarried, and after a few years, he predeceased her, and then a third one also predeceased her. And anyway, the daughter was saying, you know, I've often wondered what would happen, you know, or how it would be if they all would have got to heaven together. And so I wrote on Facebook, I don't know if that would happen. Because the way it was described to me is that when you go to that place, to that village on the other side, a man who had gone there described it as sort of a featureless plain. Excuse me. But anyway, but whatever your mind conjured up would appear, you know, houses and people and whatso. But the spirit, say the widow, can appear in two or more places all at the same time. It's not like this world, the world of, you know, that has laws of physics, you know, about two objects can't occupy the same space at the same time. Well, one of the things about stories of raven, about coyote, is that they're not bound by those rules. And so in the spirit world, they're not bound by those rules either, from the way I understand it. So what would happen would be that spirit of that woman would join the spirit of her first husband. That spirit of that woman would join the spirit of her second husband, and the spirit of that woman would join her third husband. And so they would exist in such a way that they never came into conflict. You know, they don't come into contact. And so the daughter Facebooked me back and said, "You know, it almost sounds like they talk about parallel dimensions." I said, "Well, I don't know if that's what it is, you know. All I know is what I was told, and that's how it was explained to me." So there's quite a few things like that that were explained. In that story, it's of a man who went to sleep in his house, and he woke sometime in the middle of the night, and his house was full of light, but there was no light. All the occupants were asleep, but there was a host of guests, a large group of people in his house. They were singing, they were drumming, they were dancing, eating. They were having a big party. And then, as he was watching, things begin to quieten down, and people begin to leave. And one man was watching him. He approached and said to this person, "We want you to go with us." And he says, "No." Well, he said, "Where are you going?" He says, "To the village back there." And he says, "No." And he says, "No, come with us." "No, I'm not going with you. I can't come back. "No, you come with us. You can come back." "No, I don't think so." "No, come on. You can come back." He said, "You sure?" And he said, "Yes, I'm certain. You can come back." "Okay, you promise." So he said, as he stepped through the doorway into this absolute black, and then suddenly it was light, and he looked around, there's nobody there, just a flat, it's almost like walking on a cloud, there was no substance to anything. And then he thought of his house, and suddenly there's a house there, and he started thinking about people, and they start appearing. And pretty soon the place was full of people, and some were almost in a state of ecstasy. They were so happy. And there were others, their mind wasn't quite as hot. We call it Gudangai Kina. Their mind was hot, but it wasn't like the other ones. This is a state of happiness. And so there was a spectrum to where it finally got to where there were people were almost expressionless. And then it continued on this scale to people who were in pain until you finally got to the far end of the scale. People were in extreme agony, suffering terrible, terrible pain, but he could see no cause for it. So he asked his guide, this person that convinced him that he could return, "Why are those people over there so happy and those people over there in such pain?" He said, "Well, those over there that's so happy, they're getting ready to go back. And the ones over there that's in pain, they're feeling the pain they caused when they were alive. And that pain will continue so long as it lasted in his human life," we'll put it that way. "So if he caused something now that went on for generations, that's how long he would experience that pain. And he would experience it through all the people that were affected by that pain." And then gradually, as it begins to diminish, he begins moving closer and closer to the middle until finally he begins to feel some happiness. And so this person asked, well, how do you get back? And he said, in the normal way. And this person didn't quite understand. But he went on and asked, he says, do you get to go back more than once? He said, of course, yes, you go back more than once. He said, the first time you go back, it's because there's something you did not yet learn. So you have to go back and learn that thing. The second time is there is something that you have not taught. The third time is when there's something you haven't finished. Then the fourth time is your choice. And thereafter, you can choose as often as you want as to how many times you'll return to the human form, back to this life. And then there's another part of the story that tells about a boy with his grandfather, his Chana. They're out on a canoe, and the boy's sitting in the bow paddling, and his Chana's in the stern paddling. They're passing near an island, and suddenly that boy became very agitated. And his grandfather asked, what's wrong? What's wrong? And the boy pointed to the island. He said, that's where I was killed. And his grandfather thought, well, maybe he's not feeling well. So he says, I think we better go home. So he turned around and went back to the village. So the next day, they start out again. This time, grandfather took a different route but circled so he could come by this island again, but from a different direction. And as soon as the boy spotted the island, he started yelling again, that's where I was killed, Chana, that's where I was killed. And so his grandfather thought there was something amiss with this boy. So he took him back to the village. And he called his friends, the old men, the other old men, and sat down. He said, my grandson is experiencing some difficulty. And he named the island and said, when we were going by, I think it was Green Island, he started shouting, that's where I was killed, that's where I was killed. And so they didn't know what to do about this. This was beyond their ability to comprehend what was going on. So Haga, this spiritual person or medicine man, people call witch doctor, was brought into the picture. They went to his house and told him what the boy had said. And so Haga says, okay, tomorrow we're all going to go with him. We're going to go to that place and he can show it to us and tell us his story. Because it sounds to me that there's great yak'u, lots of truth in it. So the next day they went, and when they pull up on the shore, this boy said, they said, where was it? You were killed. And he pointed sort of an open area in the forest near the shore. And they went up and went into this sort of clearing, and there's old logs had fallen and very heavy moss. Some of this was moss was maybe half a meter deep. And so he was asked by Haga, where was it you was killed? He said, right over there. He said, I was splitting wood. I had a wedge, and he had a hammer made out of it was stone hammer on a wooden handle. And he said, I was going to split that one block, and I heard a scream or war cry behind me, and I turned, and everything went dark. And so Haga asked, well, did anything else happen? Oh, yes, he said, when I opened my eyes. He said, it's like I was in a heavy fog. I couldn't see anything. The fog was all around me, so thick. And they said then there was like a ladder of arrows coming out of the sky. And there was no place else to go, so I started climbing. I climbed, I climbed, I climbed, I climbed. And I got tired, so I rested. And then I started to climb some more. And I climbed some more, climbed some more, climbed some more. Then I got tired, and I rested again. So there's no place else to go, so I continued climbing till I was tired again and rested. And I thought, pretty soon I got to get someplace. So I started again. I was getting so tired, I didn't think I could lift it on my foot one more time. And then I looked up, and I could see something above me, and I could see the sky. So he said, I climbed all the way to the top, and I reached over the top, and I grabbed the hole. I could feel it, the vegetation, real heavy, thick moss. So I dug my fingers into it, and I pulled myself up. And I looked around, and they said I was in a muskeg, you know, mossy and kind of swamp, few pools of water, stunted trees. And there was a narrow trail, looked like a deer trail. So I start walking. And I walked and walked and I walked some more. And he says, finally, I was wondering, you know, maybe I should turn around, go back. But there was no place to go back to. So I kept going. And then the road, this trail, separated into two. And right at the middle was an old lady. And she was half stone. So I approached her. And she didn't say anything. She just kept looking at me. Finally, I said, Grandmother, Nana, which way should I go? And Nana said to me, my grandmother said to me, the choice is one only you can make. But I'll tell you this much. If you take the narrow trail to your right, it's going to wind through. There's going to be big rocks. There's going to be trees blown down. There's going to be lots of obstacles. And when you get to the end of it, he said, it'll take you back, take you to a place, it'll take you back to where you'll experience hunger and cold and pain and fear, but you'll also experience warmth and love, comfort, and all those good things that humans experience. But if you take the one to your left, it's a nice wide trail. There's no obstacles. And he said, what she said was, if you walk on that trail, you'll never get hungry, you'll never get tired, you'll never get cold, you'll never get sick. And so you'll be in a place where everything's always in balance, everything's always very pleasant. So he thought, I had enough trouble. So I think I'll go on this wide trail. So he started walking. As he was walking, he started thinking about his family, about his wife. Gee, I'm going to miss her. She always cooks that good stuff for me. She fixes clothes for me. Sometimes when I'm sick, I can feel her cool hand on my brow. And my children, the times I'm going to miss of holding them when they're crying, when they're sick, when they're hurt, and knowing I'm their dad, and knowing that they trust me and they need me to protect them. I'm going to miss those things. And the food, oh, that food. A dried halibut. Oh, I love dried halibut. With a little bit satow, you know, this grease made from the hooligan. So he talked to himself about those things he's going to miss. And then he realized, he looked up, and he was back by the woman that was half stone. And she didn't say anything. She just looked at him without blinking. And he said, "I think I changed my mind. I'm going to go the other way, even if it's painful, even if it's difficult." So he started walking. And he started thinking about the times in the wintertime, trying to find food. Snow so deep you can't hardly walk. You knock a duck down and it falls in the water and you got to go out and get it. You're cold, you're hungry, you're wet. When you're sick, you can't hold food down, all these things. Then you watch loved ones die. See them get sick, get hurt. Oh, he couldn't bear that thought. Next thing you know, he look up and there's that woman again, that half stone. So this is how it was. He would go down this trail a little bit farther than the wide, narrow one and start talking to himself about all the things in his life. When that drum would start, the people begin to move. And he started to sing. Then he thought about how it feels to dance and how it feels to watch the others and the feeling of satisfaction when they're putting up a pole. Or that feeling with from Gya Isla, they call potlatch, the giving away time. And so next thing he knows, on the narrow trail, he's right back in front of that person again, that half-stone person. And he said, "This time I'm not going to turn back, I'm going home." She said, "Okay." And she handed him something. He says, "What's this?" She said, "It's a cape, a cloak. When you get to the end of the trail, don't look down. Just put this over your head and let yourself fall." So he started walking. He walked, he walked, he walked, he walked. He was getting tired. And then all of a sudden he looked down and there's just empty space. He was at the edge. And he became afraid because he could see how it was very high. But he was told not to look down. So what he did was he sat down, he put his feet over the edge. So he was sitting there with his feet dangling over the edge. And he leaned forward and he looked down. And all he could see was needles, all these needles pointing up toward him. And he was afraid. And he started thinking about it. Then before he could talk himself out of it, he whipped that cloak up and wrapped it around his head and he just let himself fall forward. As he was falling, it's sort of like a feather that's floating. It's floating gently to earth. And that's how he landed, very gently. And then he looked around and he recognized, "Hey, this is the same country as around home, but I don't recognize this place." He couldn't see any hills. He was down in this heavy muskeg, so he thought, "Well, I'll see if I can find a freshwater stream, and I can follow it down to the ocean. Then I get my bearings, and I know how to get home." So he started walking. He walked a long time, finally came to a small stream, and he started walking beside that stream. And it's starting to get dark, and he thought, "Well, I better find a place to sleep." Well, there was a big tree, an unusual tree. He'd never seen one like this. It was glowing right near the bank of the stream. And the roots came out from the tree just to touch the water, but they were like in a V shape, V form, the way that the roots jutted out. And they were maybe waist high on both sides of him. So he thought, "Well, I can sleep here." So it's like sitting in the bow of a skiff. You sit there where the two sides come together. So he propped himself up. He's sitting there, and he fell asleep. And he woke up in the middle of the night. It was dark. There's no moon. He doesn't remember there being stars either, but it was very dark. And he could hear the water, you know, that stream that was going by. He could hear the water. And he looked, and the water's moving up closer and closer toward him. So he started pulling his feet back. But this water kept rising from that stream. till finally he had his knees up against his chest, sort of what they call in the needle position, and he was hugging his knees. And he said, the last thing I remember was hearing somebody say, cut him off right there. And he said, I didn't remember anything until we were going by the island. Then I remembered that's where I was killed. And so after he told his story, Shaga told that boy, he says, you got to come with me. And he went into the muskeg, and there's a tree we call tzutz. Tzutz is sort of a funny thing because it's not that tree. But tzutz, it refers to the sinker on a fishing line also. And tzutz refers to a pillow. But it also refers to that tree. I asked my uncle one time, Ani, I said, how come those things have the same name? He said, because that's not what they are. I know I'm slow and a little dumb, but I said, would you please explain? And he kind of chuckled. He said, it's simple. That's what he'd always say, it's simple. That sinker, you put it on line, you put it in the water, and it takes that hook down into, we'll say, another reality. And that pillow, tzut, you put your head on it, it takes you down into another reality. Then he stopped talking. So I said, well, what about that tree? He said, got to fall on me to knock me into another world? You know, kind of smart aleck kind of guy. Actually, I wasn't. Actually, I didn't say that to him. All I just said, what about the tree? And because, you know, I really wanted to know. And he said, when your body is severely injured or you're desperately ill, he said the medicine was made from that tree that permits your mind to go into another reality while the body heals itself. So that Shaga took that young, that took that boy and told his Chana and the others, we got to fix this. The canoe is leaking. And they didn't understand what he meant. But he took that boy and he went up to this tree and he got some of the bark and some other parts of the tree and he made a strong tea out of it. And he told the boy, he says, you lay down on this moss right here and I want you to drink this. So the boy drank it and he fell into a deep sleep. And so then the old man, that Shaga told him, there's some things you're not supposed to know. Your mind, he says, your gudangai, that your being cannot exist in two places at one time. So we're going to have to leave one behind. So you won't remember any of this when you wake up. So then he left him, and he went away from where the boy was asleep, and he made a campfire, and he stayed there. And then pretty soon, after a while, you know, this boy got up, and he walked over, and he told his grandfather, he says, I'm hungry. So his grandfather fed him. But what he was doing was wiping clean the memory of that, because you couldn't live remembering two lives, because you'd begin to lose track of which one was which. It's sort of having a constant or a permanent flashback. So anyway, those are the kinds of things they would talk about when I was growing up. And anyway, some of these phrases I was talking about, this is in the northern Haida. When we talk about the past, we're saying it's in front of me, I can see it. For example, the Watsqua Hagui and Kwangung. Hagui means it's way over there. So this is saying it's way over there, you know, clear over to the horizon. But I can see it. If I can see it, I can take you over there to experience it. So the storytelling wasn't just putting words. It was told in such a way that you experienced it rather than heard just the words. So when it came time for you to pass on a knowledge, you'd pass it on from the first person. So if it was before or on the other side of the horizon, before we humans came into being as humans, there were some other people called Tladlu Hat'ai. That's humans over the horizon. But Tladlu Hagui is that time before this time. And so on this side of it, that's when we call Watsqua Hagui on Quadgung. But that one comes right up to the beginning of the last ice age. And then you get Awash Hagui, which means it's a long time ago. But there was also another time in between. What's it called? It's referred to as when the tide came in. And this is when the story of the flood occurred. It was after the beginning of the Ice Age, and sometime before the end of it, it was in two parts. So this one, I can't think of it right now, but anyway, it means when the tide came in. And then Awat Agui takes us to up to that Ice Age, but just in general everyday language, you would use it to mean long time ago. But for us, in our language, the past is in front of me. I can see it. Whereas the past of future is behind me, I can't see it. It's like I'm standing in a river of time and it's coming from behind me. Anyway, so that's one of the things. Then when you ask somebody's age, Gislu Dung Tadai Hidung, that's asking how many winters are you? I guess that might be from the Ice Age. Because the majority of the year was winter. So if you lived through a winter, that's pretty much of a year, I guess. So that's what it was called. Gislu Tadai Hedung. Some of the other things that these old guys would tell me, things was like, if somebody is having a hard time and you want to express your support for them, that means my mind is strong for you because you stand there. This is unconditional support, that you're extending your support to that person without condition. That's all right, I'll let you get old. That's a sort of a blessing, I guess we say in English. If a young person did something for me, I'd tell him, Wask ananu dunk kayata sang, kayata sang. That's all right, I'll let you get old. And lots of times a story, too, would begin with Unusu Dik Sit Datkung. That means someone else told me. In other words, I didn't see it myself. And something we'd say to somebody when we're parting, Damanu Gant Klingung, watch out for yourself, or take care of yourself. Or if somebody says that to me, Damanu Gant Klingung, I would respond with Damano Hunsanan, you take care of yourself too. And we hear the people talk about being master carvers. Well, I asked my father about that, and he said we don't have a term for that. He said the most you can say is, for example, a person who is very good at making totems. Damanu kya ank it ayagn. He is a good pole whittler. Yeah, he's good at whittling poles. And so anyway, that should give you some idea of some of these things. I'm always laughing. Anyway, so I was expecting to get a call from somebody today, but it didn't come in, so we've run out of time. I didn't realize the time went that fast. Holy smoke. I'm going to get a T-shirt that says, "Help, I'm talking and can't stop." So anyway, thank you for listening, and thank you for being here, Robin, to help me out with this. It's always good working with you. And we'll see you next Thursday. This is CITR 101.9 FM at University of British Columbia Radio.
Music, drumming, dance, transformation, an expression of the heart through voice, the heart opening to love, channeling of intention, Kirtan community, yoga culture, bhakti, ancient traditions, modern environment, intentional community, the continuation of story, the ever-evolving mythology, reconnecting with the divine through voice, through song, through mantra, an exploration of chanting. Join us every Thursday at 4 p.m. on CATR 101.9 FM for Mantra. Or check us out on the web at mantraradio.co.
I'm Janice McKenzie, and I started doing a show in 1985 called Rude Awakening, and I want to wish CITR a very happy 75th birthday, FM 101.9.
Kasla. My name is Gennarji O'Sullivan of the Tlaalitsis Nation, originally from Turner Island. You're listening to Window, exploring the legacy of Indian residential schools.
This PSA was cut from a rally called Honor the Apology in Ottawa, Ontario. Those speaking are Clayton Thomas Mueller, Melody McIver, and Jocelyn Ayatoll.
Today, across this country they call Canada, is a day where we're asking for truth to come to the surface so that we can actually begin a conversation about reconciliation. Today, Canadians, newcomers, First Nations, Métis and Inuit peoples from all walks of life and religious denominations will reflect upon the impacts of Canada's residential schools. The burden of this experience has been on your shoulders for far too long. The burden is properly ours as a government and as a country. There is no place in Canada for the attitudes that inspired the Indian residential school system to ever again prevail. You have been working on recovering from this experience for a long time, and in a very real sense, we are now joining you on this journey. That was Stephen Harper in 2008. Unfortunately, the burden of this experience has not been shared. We believe it is time for us to all face what happened during one of the most violent policies in this country's history. We believe it is time to take a journey of honesty together. We now know that there is tangible violations of the Geneva Code on Genocide, that this country has committed crimes of genocide unequivocally against indigenous peoples. When we speak to the residential school, when we speak to the 60 scoop, when we speak to the day school, we speak it about it as if it's in the history. But our children are dying and suffering.
You have just heard At Window exploring the legacy of Indian residential schools. Both my mother and I attended St. Michael's Residential School in Alert Bay, BC. This is a part of a larger project called Resonating Reconciliation that engages community radio as a tool to help define what reconciliation is. Resonating Reconciliation is meant to help reconcile all Canadians to this shared history. This is the work of the National Campus and Community Radio Association, the Rajam Slam Society, and this station. Resonating Reconciliation is also supported by the Indian Residential School Survivor Society and is funded by the Truth and Reconciliation Commission. To hear more, go to www.ncra.ca/resonating.
Become a friend of CITR and get great discounts on Commercial Drive and in other areas at
Bone Rattle Music, High Life Records, People's Co-op Bookstore, Audio Pile Records, Bad Bird Media, BAM Merch Canada, and the Vancouver Music Gallery.
Wow, it sure does pay to be a friend of CITR. To find out more, visit us in room 233 of the sub on the UBC campus or go online to www.citr.ca.
Keep smiling, keep shining, knowing you can always count on me. For sure, that's what friends are for.
In the beginning is the dance, and the dance is with God, and the dance is God, and God glows red as he drops some legs into gold mines, synthesizing lush vegetation on the green planet down below, growing up into the sunshine. And with respect to the goddess Earth Mother Queen, one black star is placed in between this cosmic color scheme, and God is pleased. So the god of the sky dances with the goddess of the earth. He pours forth his milk and she gives birth. He knows his blood will be spilled for his infants to grow into men. So God pours libations and prays to the ancestors to nourish his stellar children. The seed that is planted rises like the sun, a child of flesh and bone. The flesh gains mass and the bone densifies and hardens into stone. The stone is forged into iron through will, resolve, and desire. The iron is smelted by fire. Still God in the sky ascends higher. to pour water on the fiery blaze and silence the talking drum beat.